Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. It is June 30th, the last day of the month. Big decisions out of the nation's high court, we get reaction to the birthright citizenship ruling and more. All About Family, the story the Obama Presidential Center tells about his family and childhood growing up in Hawaii. We hear from Barack Obama's sister Maya. A new report out by the University of Hawaii Economic Research Center, there is a new twist and turn in the question about an energy future with or without liquefied natural gas. And we learn about a program that has relaunched to strengthen the political process among our young people. And why are comedians popping up in movie theaters? Is it a trend that will stick around? This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. This morning, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a couple of rulings, one on birthright citizenship and the other on transgender participation in school sports. We hear from the American Civil Liberties Union of Hawaii. Wookie Kim is a legal director of the ACLU here in the islands. We spoke with him this morning about the big news of the day. It's a mixed bag. President Donald Trump lost his bid on the birthright citizenship case, but the court did rule that states are allowed to ban transgender athletes in school sports. The ACLU has been involved in both immigrant issues and transgender rights.
We were very, very pleased to see that the Supreme Court rejected Trump's attempt to basically rewrite the Constitution. This is a really foundational principle. Birthright citizenship is extremely important, and it ensures that the government doesn't have the ability to pick and choose who has rights and who is a citizen within our country.
Well, you know, some worry, though, because Trump is adamant that he would like to see Congress change the law.
Well, that's interesting. I actually hadn't seen the news that the president is now trying to call on Congress, but this is written into the Constitution itself, and so the process to change that is much more complicated and requires a lot more work. And I think that's precisely the point. There are certain things that, you know, the president is not able to do unilaterally. Similarly here, there are certain things that Congress can't do unilaterally as well.
Yes, there are some who, you know, were very concerned about overreach, right, and the checks and balances. And particularly, though, this ruling, lots of hand-wringing because it would affect thousands of people who were born in this country and really turn things upside down.
Citizenship is, again, it's a foundational concept and it endows so many rights. And so for the president to try and take that away in opposition to how courts and our society has interpreted the birthright citizenship concept, that was really alarming. And what the court did today was to protect that.
What are you hearing from folks out in our community, knowing what was at stake with this ruling? I don't know if you folks had cases that you were looking at.
We don't have any cases currently that sort of hinge on birthright citizenship, but of course, within the last year or so, the ACLU of Hawaii has increased its efforts to protect immigrants' rights. And the kind of through line in all of our advocacy is to prevent government overreach, right? And several clients that we've represented were subject to unconstitutional prolonged detention. And so we haven't encountered the birthright citizenship issue directly, but of course, I think if you are a non-citizen today here in Hawaii, there's at least more comfort in knowing that citizenship won't be an issue, or at least birthright citizenship won't be an issue.
Yes, and I just saw a report this week about how many cases Hawaii has outstanding or pending, you know, green card issues compared to, you know, the rest of the country. And while we wait to see what changes are made to that green card program, certainly they can get some comfort in knowing that these rights have been upheld by the High Court.
Yes, for sure.
And then I have to switch gears on you because the other ruling had to do with participation of transgender students in school sports. And, you know, you had handled the case of Title IX, you know, here in Hawaii against the Department of Education for girls' equity in the girls' sports programs. But what are your thoughts on the transgender ruling?
Well, we're very disappointed that the Supreme Court essentially ruled that states can ban transgender girls from school athletics. But one thing that's really important to know is that the decision does not change on-the-ground circumstances here in Hawaii, because as you may know, about 5-6 years ago, Hawaii passed a state version of Title IX that expressly prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And beyond that, DOE policy, all the major school athletics policies are trans-inclusive policies. So at the end of the day, this is a ruling that allows other jurisdictions and other school districts to implement discriminatory policies, but the decision doesn't directly impact Hawaii, at least right now.
But perhaps in some states, if they have the desire to use the language that we have used here in the islands to strengthen the position of programs in their state.
That's certainly a possibility. You know, I think that's part of the beauty of our systems of government, where each state can kind of choose to enact protections that are stronger than what the federal constitution or federal law provides. Importantly, right, these decisions turn on interpretation of federal law, specifically Title IX, and then the federal constitution, specifically the Equal Protection Clause. And so that has no bearing or limited bearing on the interpretation of Hawaii law and the Hawaii constitution.
And I just think of the timing of this, because last week we just you know, marked the anniversary of Title IX, and, you know, we're celebrating a gay pride also. And so I'm sure there's a lot of mixed feelings for folks out there in the LGBTQ, you know, community about what has just been handed down.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it raises a lot of questions. It's extremely disappointing, you know, as a former college athlete, I think it's really important to reject the idea that the court discusses that sports is a zero-sum proposition, because the reality is that it doesn't have to be that way. There are obviously aspects of sports that are zero-sum, but at the end of the day, right, sports are opportunities to develop teamwork, communication, to challenge yourself, to, you know, learn discipline. And to do it in a way where everyone is able to participate, I think, is really, really important. And so to the extent that today's decision undermines this sort of like cooperative spirit of athletics, that's a huge loss for all of us.
Yes, but we look to see what does it change locally, and it doesn't do much in that regard, that you know, the rules that we have on the books still hold, even though it's not the law of the land. Anything
Correct.
Else do you want to underscore?
I mean, I think to the extent that we are frustrated and disappointed about these rulings, I think it's really important to speak up in kind of the smaller ponds, meaning whether it's the state legislature, whether it's the school board. There are so many different ways that we can make a difference and to change policies in the way that we want. And we shouldn't have to rely on 9 people in Washington, D.C. kind of determining our fate or our future. And so if you're disappointed with today's ruling, there are other ways to prevent these outcomes in the future.
We've been talking with Wookie Kim, legal director of the ACLU of Hawaii, about key decisions handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court this morning.
Support for HPR comes from the Hawaii Department of Transportation. Whether it's driving to the beach or just running errands, folks can help keep family and friends safe by taking it easy on the road, buckling up, and designating a sober driver.
On the next Fresh Air, the conflicts between politics and the arts. We talk with Isaac Butler about his new book, The Perfect Moment: God, Sex, and the Birth of America's Culture Wars. Butler says the conflict had a transformative effect on him because at the same time the culture wars hurtled toward their climax, art saved his life. Join us.
Beginning this afternoon at 3, following On Point.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Museum of Art. In Divine Disruption, the Art of Tseren Chirpa, the Nepalese artist explores issues such as migration and identity. Now on view, honolulumuseum.org.
Maya Satoru is back in the islands this week. She was in Chicago for the dedication of the Obama Presidential Center, an official opening to the public on Juneteenth. Satoru says she and former President Barack Obama walked the museum and grounds together for the first time. The museum tells the story of Barack Obama's journey to the White House as the 44th President of the United States and the first of African-American descent. There is a water garden named for their mother, and there is a basketball court, a love for the game that came out of a gift from his father. Here's what Maya Satoru felt as she toured the center with her big brother.
It was a very moving experience. The whole time in Chicago allowed us to not only have reunion with old friends from D.C. and Chicago, but also connect with new community to renew our optimism, I think. And I felt that the opening was really helping us to remember that optimism isn't naive, that it's actually a choice and a discipline, that even amid setbacks or in the presence of tension, conflict, in the middle of the storm, that we can choose to have courageous optimism, that we can renew our commitment to democracy and collaboration, that we can also redesign that for new generation and new purpose. I thought it was very uplifting. I had all kinds of feelings, not just the pride and the hopefulness and some grief that things have changed, but also great tenderness and a sense of possibility. Moving through the exhibits was beautiful. I really felt that it was future focused. It wasn't just about what has already been done by him and others, but also about what we might accomplish together. I thought it was educational without being pedantic. I loved the stories that kids were recording, and there was an explicit invitation to reflect on our collective responsibility, our kuleana, and to join a community, both present and future. And I also felt like it was responsible, like it didn't shy away from the incompleteness of what the administration accomplished, right? They really were deliberate in sort of noting that there's a lot of work that remains, whether
yes.
in family leave or healthcare or, you know, the unresolved state of the Dreamers, but also in being in beloved community and in all the work of democracy.
Well, you know, we were able to talk to a couple of 10-year-old students, you know, who go to school in that area, and they were looking forward to going to the library, you know, and it was just so neat to see the sense of place that, you know, your brother brought to that exhibit and to that center, talking about, you know, his time there in Chicago and, you know, having, you know, his daughters there and starting his family and his political career. But I did so love the Hawaii story and the little mementos, his little handprint, the ceramic handprint. Just those touches, I don't know, really warmed my heart.
Absolutely. I think those are sweet reminders of the potential in every little handprint, you know, and also, as you noted, the importance of having a sense of reverence for place, people, and community that helps to shape us, that those stories are stories that we bring with us wherever we go. We have a sense of responsibility when we are at our best to those stories, but also we're fortified by them, right? And that we can bring all the stories of becoming, of who we are, of the people who nourished us and the places that shaped us into bear, not only as leaders and educators, but also as learners. And so the museum's like narrative of life beginning where his life actually did, you know, with being raised by our mom, boyhood in Hawaii, before moving to Chicago. I felt like the mural by Mark Bradford was also so beautiful on Chicago. But, you know, I think that's all so important because it helps us to know that we are layered beings. We contain multitudes. I was thinking about how Hawaii actually competed, you know, to host the Presidential Center back in 2015. And one of the things about the proposal was that there was narrative built around the Kumulipo, you know, and this beautiful image of creation, you know, the oli around images of coral, a single polyp that over generations builds land and all life sustains around that. This metaphor of community built across generations, I felt was present there, and I think is an important reminder. And even though Chicago was ultimately chosen because it is a central place where on the continent so many Keiki can go and visit, I know that for Barak, lineage and the collective responsibility nourished in Hawaii still runs through him and through the building that did get made. And of course, Ka'iwi Punihe, life, beloved Obama leader, but also just leader here in Hawaii, introduced him, and she spoke beautifully, I thought, of shared kuleana and passed between generations from this one hanao and his birth sands and connecting all of us to build a space of new possibilities with resilience. I loved her use of the ali'i plant as a metaphor. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. And yeah, I know that was a surprise to many people to see someone from Kamehameha Schools there doing the introduction. But she was a Obama fellow. And so many of the graduates, you know, got to get the sneak preview. So that was really fun for them. And
we have been hearing from Maya Satoro reflecting on the official opening of the Obama Presidential Center in the south side of Chicago. We will have more from our conversation with Maya after a break.
Let's get back to our conversation with Maya Satoro. We spoke this morning and asked her about how she feels about the center opening amidst efforts to undo President Obama's key policies, from health care to immigration.
Therein rests the grief that some of us feel, but I do feel that the week itself was a reminder not to despair in the presence of that struggle. I think that the hours that I spent at the center in the days that followed the opening were really beautiful because I saw it as it was meant to be experienced with lots of children in the playground, with intergenerational connection at picnic tables, and with elders reading to their kids in the library, with people who were food insecure being given seeds and fruits and vegetables, flowers from the garden. And for me, sitting in reflection at the garden named after our mother helped me to feel that we are all in a place where we need to parent ourselves, but also nourish and love on one another, and that we mustn't give up on one another. Mm-hmm. We mustn't give up on the project of democracy. We mustn't give up on knowing our own capacities as upstanders. And
Your mother had so much idealism. And I happened to be over at the East-West Center recently and walked down by the Koi Gardens, you know, and I know that you had your mother's memorial service there. It was just a lovely spot. And I thought, just that sense of place. And I wondered about that, you know, the water terrace garden for your mom and what that might be like. Because all that was a surprise for you, right? I mean, you didn't know what to expect.
No, I didn't know what Myelin was going to do. I loved this sort of the reference to Puka source, this beautiful wellspring, and the waters flowing were really nourishing, and the mist, which cools everyone. I think that Myelin has done some beautiful work in the past that acknowledges both space and place, but also emptiness and all that exists, for instance, beneath the surface of the ocean. And I think that she was, in fact, a very ethical being and a visionary, to the extent that she was able to understand the importance of community source solutions. When she did her work in microfinance all over South and Southeast Asia and elsewhere, it was with a sense of reverence for what ground-up community can provide. And so I felt like the garden really echoed in some ways the rice paddies of Indonesia where she worked. It represented life and flow and resilience of things she embodied. I believe that she believed in beauty as a form of dignity for all communities. And I thought that it was a beautiful tribute. And it was meaningful for me to first go there with my brother. He brought me there to show it to me first on a friends and family tour. And then I was able to go there with my daughter in the days that followed. And I felt her there truly in this patient, purposeful, life-giving space and hour. And I felt that she would have loved to sit down right there and speak to the kids that were playing in the families and watch everyone moving past. And so I felt like it really carried her spirit forward beautifully.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, just the power of the quietness of the moments there, thinking of your mom. You know, I also went down to the home court, right, where, you know, everybody knows your brother's crazy about basketball. And I remember, you know, that his dad, when he was here visiting him when he was 10 years old, gave him a gift of a basketball. And so I just went driving down around, you know, the neighborhood where he lived there in the Punahou area and went by the courts where he played, right? I went by Kapi'olani Park at Paki Courts, you know, because I heard he played street ball over there, right? A little different from the ball that he played at Punahou on the basketball team there. But yeah, what was that like for you?
It was really fun, again, to see it animated with so many lives. And the truth is that I think sports has been very important to Brock because it is a place where he can and has always been able to get out of his head, but also be in connection with others, not simply through speech, but also through play. And I know that in Hawaii, it was a place of great belonging for him, or a kid who's still figuring out who he was could hang out with his friends and enjoy the discipline and the teamwork and joy of it, that of belonging and of being together and being a neighborhood. And the home court in Chicago is, again, an inviting place where kids of all kinds are invited, not just kids, of course, but especially kids can feel welcome. And that thread of community that runs through that space and all the spaces there at the OPC, I think is, again, part of the beautiful democratic language of the game. And I think he was also really looking forward to having young people feel like they have multiple skills, multiple intelligences, multiple ways of expression, and and so many ways to be together there.
It's a marvelous center, and we hope that people here from Hawaii will get a chance to see it.
I hope so. Please go. It is meant for everyone, and I think it's a beautiful offering, and also that the people of Hawaii have so much to contribute in the way of stories and engagement and dialogue and co-creation of the future, not only in Chicago's OPC, but, you know, just more generally in the country.
Well, I hope that people, I hope that people will be able to get on a plane and stop over there to see it, because it is pretty terrific. And yeah, it gives us hope. It gives us hope for sure. That was Maya Satoru, sister of President Barack Obama, who we talked to this morning. She shared her thoughts on the opening of the Presidential Center in Chicago this month. Satoru is on faculty at the University of Hawaii's Institute for Peace.
Support for HPR comes from the University of Hawaii Foundation, supporting the University of Hawaii and its research programs from healthcare to climate resiliency to technology. Learn more at uhfoundation.org.
Aloha, this is Derek Molama. Please join me for the first episode of Kanikapila Vintage, the new podcast from HPR featuring classic interviews from Kanikapila Sunday. We're kicking off the series with the Brothers Casimero at the legendary Mountain Apple Studios from 2004. It's available this Thursday wherever you get your podcast. Sponsored by Manu Healii.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Aloha Air Cargo, offering 5 direct flights weekly from Honolulu to Seattle Tacoma Airport. More information at AlohaAirCargo.com.
There is a new report out that makes the debate about our energy future just a little more interesting. Honolulu Civil Beat Stuart Yurton joins us live this morning. Hi, Stuart.
Hello, Catherine.
Yes, so you have a story today, the report from the University of Hawaii Economics Research Organization, UHERO.
That's right. UHERO published a report today that really the context is most important, as people probably know. There's a debate or movement for 2 new power plants here. One would be HECO's upgrade of the Waiau plant. The other that has been sort of announced, but no details yet, would be done by JERA, a Japanese company that would fuel the new power plant with liquefied natural gas and import it. The report basically says, no, we don't need this. We don't need new power plants at all. We can keep the lights on with solar only, and in addition to what is already there with some power plants, and we can actually save a lot of money for consumers if we just make the solar farms and rooftop solar easier to develop.
Well, it's interesting, but what does Hawaiian Electric say?
Hawaiian Electric says, look, some of the assumptions in the study are wrong. The cost of solar in Hawaii is actually more than the study says. And also Hawaiian Electric points to a long-standing argument against this idea, which is that we just don't have enough available land suitable for solar here on Oahu. Again, this discussion was had years ago, and it seemed to have not won the day, the idea that we don't have enough available land here, practically speaking, that argument won the day. But again, in a lot of ways, this study quantifies some of the longstanding positions of the advocates saying, we really only need solar. We can do it with mostly solar. That's the story, and it is an important discussion to have right now when we have these two projects in the works.
Yeah, I was just wondering, though, just about redundancy, you know, to upgrade those aging plants, you know. But I don't know. Anything else you can share on that front?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is that UHERO came out today, Carl Bonham, saying, look, this is not our position on this. I know he said we published it. It is under the UHERO name. He understands that it carries more weight being published by UHERO, but he really wanted to make clear that this is not a UHERO report. This was Michael Roberts was a research fellow for UHERO, was one of the authors, and it's not really been vetted by UHERO. It was published by UHERO, and in some ways, UHERO is distancing itself from this, which is very interesting.
Yeah, that is curious. It makes you want to find out more.
Yeah, well, this is a very important topic right now, and I think UHERO wants, as an organization, really wants to publish work, get ideas out there, encourage academic freedom for fellows to publish work, enhance the debate, and everything else. But it really does not want, in this case, to be attached to the report. The only thing that UHERO is really standing behind fully, Carl Bonham said, are the quarterly forecasts on the economy. That's the work of a lot of UHERO people, and that is the closest thing to a UHERO work, he said. The other thing is if he says something, mm-hmm. It's a UHERO statement. But it is very interesting. It's an important study. The idea, again, is not new. This quantifies it and really contributes to the debate. And again, the question is, what effect is this going to have on Hawaiian Electric's plant? What effect is it going to have on the JERA idea? You know, the two parties had been talking. We haven't gotten an official statement from either one of them, but there has been discussion that JERA and HECO would partner together mm-hmm. on something. But again, we just don't know what's going to happen, if this is going to affect that deal or not.
Right.
Regardless, it is an important study.
Yes.
And I guess it's important enough for UHERO to say, this isn't our official position.
Right, right. So, yeah, we need to stay tuned. But thank you so much, Stuart.
Thank you, Catherine.
We've been talking to reporter Stuart Yurton with Honolulu Civil Beat. Look for his story today at civilbeat.org. There is a move to kickstart a program aimed at strengthening our democratic process. HPR's Cassie Ordonez spent some time with high school students going through a civics engagement class that the Office of Hawaiian Affairs actually started back in the 80s. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So tell us about this program.
Yeah. So the Aho Opio program came after educators had been long pushing for youth to get involved in more civic engagement and having them understand the legislative process of how bills become law. And it went dormant, back in the early 2000s, partly due to budgeting. And then it was funded by the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. And it actually, jump-started a lot of political careers, including OHA board chair Kai Kahele. He went through that program in 1991 when he was a teenager. And
wow.
Look where he is now.
Right. I mean, he served in Congress and now heading the Office of Hawaiian Affairs.
Exactly. And I believe he was also in the Senate as well, in the legislature, and one of the few Native Hawaiians who were in the Senate. And so this program started in 1988, and ended around 2004, but OHA brought it back because there was more of a push to get more Native Hawaiian students involved in civic engagement. But this program was started by Rona Rodenhurst, and she championed the program in the 1980s. And Rona Rodenhurst, she was part of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs and saw the need for more Native Hawaiians to be involved in politics. I actually spoke to her niece, Brittany Kapa'ona, who's an alumna of the program and the advisor of the program.
She's seen a need for Hawaiian students to be in their own element and to be able to speak and articulate their own wants within their community, within their educational system, within their aina, within their own people and their own family due to land, being taken away, housing. And she felt that they needed a voice and they needed to learn how to use their voice. So she found it fascinating that there was really no program. And she based it off of YWCA or YMCA's youth legislative program. But in her vision, she wanted it to be at the legislature, and she wanted it to also tie in the cultural part of it.
So out of the application process, there were 60 Native Hawaiian students across Hawaii and the continental U.S. who filed to participate in the program. And around, I believe, 50 were accepted, but ultimately 38 Native Hawaiian students were able to participate. And so how they had to, the program advisors, they had to really condense 60 days of the actual legislature into 1 week. And so the bills got hands-on experience of how lawmakers work in the House of Representatives. They didn't have enough students to get into the Senate.
Yeah, because they had a little mock session.
Exactly. So they learned how to draft mock bills. They learned how to create their own committees and discuss these bills in committee. And then they also get to go through the whole process of voting and further debating on bills in the full House chamber or the full assembly.
So would the students think about it?
Oh, they were a little bit confused at first because it is a very lengthy process. But when they got really into the nitty gritty, I got to see how passionate these students were. They got to talk about military land leases. They got to talk about the voting age, incarceration, homelessness. And one bill that I thought was really interesting to see them debate about was vaping. And so how that bill was created, it was actually four legislative boys. They drafted a bill, and the original language of the bill was to keep the legal age to buy vapes at 21 years old and then put 100% wholesale tax on it. But in committee, and this actually happens in the legislature, committees will change the language of the bill. Mm-hmm. And when I talked to some of the committee chairs who tinkered with the bill, they wanted to create some political drama. That's what they told me. So they purposefully changed the language of the bill to lower the voting age from 21 to 18 years old and then put a 0% wholesale tax on it. That actually caused a lot of drama on the floor where they were debating about, why did you change my bill? Let's revert back to the language, the original language. And so when I spoke to one of the delegates who was influential in changing the language, here's a conversation between Kahi'ilani Zoller, who was part of the group who changed the bill, and Makoa Wamble, who was from Texas, who was advocating to revert back to the original language.
The whole thing about being friends and part of this program is also we wanted to just poke fun at each other. And after seeing how passionate the boys were about this bill that they all created, us girls just wanted to have a little bit of fun and be like, how can we create drama? Like how you see on TV where it's like, no, we should kill this bill. And then we just wanted that back and forth and back and forth until things got very intense and very serious. And we realized that they were for real. And so we were like, okay, we're just going to back off and just play it off like that.
Lewis got very angry that they killed the bill. Like he was sitting there in his chair all hunched over.
He wanted to kill us.
It was very funny, but it was cool to see. And also we all kind of like came to his defense too. Like, why would you do this to the bill? But after the fact, it was kind of funny.
But isn't it so crazy that that's literally what you can do to a bill? Yeah. That you could literally amend it and there was a possibility that it could have passed, even as a joke. So I think that was just another lesson of how influential even the committees can be, and especially all of our perspectives.
Yeah, so this program actually taught these students a lot about civic engagement. Some want to go into politics when they go to college, and some of them maybe want to stay away from it. But what's unique about this program is that almost everyone was related. The daughter, the granddaughter of Frank Fosse was there.
Oh, interesting. Kalani
Ka'ana'ana, the former HTA board, some of his nieces were there, and Representative Ikaika Hussey, his daughter, was there as well.
Oh, that's fascinating. All right. Interesting story, but thank you so much, Cassie.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to HPR's Cassie Ordonio. Check out the story on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for HPR comes from Ho'olanapua, serving youth impacted by trafficking through prevention, intervention, residential treatment, and recovery programs. Volunteer opportunities at ho'olanapua.org.
I'm Marco Werman. The World's Newsroom brings you the big picture stories and some other stuff.
It may surprise you to learn, but in Italy, many, many mafiosi are religious.
You don't expect to find a swimming pool in the middle of the desert.
The rule number one when planning a golf course in China is to not call it a golf course.
Join us and hear the world.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for HPR comes from HMSA. For nearly 90 years, committed to working together with employers, partners, and healthcare providers to support the health and well-being of the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
And walks into a room and starts telling jokes. The punchline? Well, they're supposed to be there. And the stage that they're standing on was probably built for them. Well, the conversation's Kevin Allen got wind of a surprising collaboration between Consolidated Theaters Kapolei and the local stand-up show Comedy U. Since May, the two groups have teamed up to feature funny people performing live inside the movie theater. And it's not all funny business, as he finds out. Please silence your phones and refrain from loud talking during this presentation.
I wish someone would interview me for comedy, and I could do like a wrestling kind of interview, like, Jose, tell me about the show tonight, and I'll just be like, from the skid marks in my underwear, to the air we breathe next to the power plant in Nanapuli, no one is going to laugh as hard as you are going to laugh at the comedy style of Jose Dynamite, and that's a promise.
You might not think it, but I'm in a movie theater right now, in Kapolei, and the stars aren't on the screen. They're on a makeshift stage in front of the screen, and they're telling jokes.
Mostly I'm so insecure that I Googled, why are my boobs boob-shaped? Anyone else? Anyone else got dropped on the chest as a child? Anyone?
What you're hearing is funny, but it's also an act of survival. From kava bars to movie theaters, businesses around Hawaii are having to reconsider how they operate and what they can do to bring in enough people to stay afloat. Some are offering what's known as a third space, a place for folks to put on live music events, pop-up art shows, or even stand-up comedy nights. Events like Comedy U's first ever stand-up night at Kapolei Consolidated Theaters, which went down late last month, is a perfect example of collaboration between a local venue and the communities it serves. And for the Consolidated Theaters chain here on Oahu, it's a response to the times. Movie ticket sales have never truly recovered since the COVID-19 pandemic in early 2020. Moviegoers in the U.S. and Canada have shrunk by more than a third since 2018, according to a recent Pew Research study. Tack on the ease of streaming movies right to your TV or laptop, and the strain that local theaters are facing has necessitated the need for something new. Fortunately, local comedian Jose Dynamite, who organizes the weekly stand-up show Comedy U, was here to help. His gaggle of giggle makers were more than willing to take the stage, even if they were a little scared.
How crazy is that, that this is a movie theater and it's converted itself into live comedy just for you guys?
It was very scary doing this when we got this set up with Consolidated, because they're trying to create a new audience experience to get people to come back to the theaters. As we know that there's so much other forms of entertainment that people can stream and stuff, and so for them to ask us, like, hey, would you be willing to do comedy here, and especially on the west side of Oahu, because there's not enough entertainment to really fulfill this side of the community, I was very honored. But it's very scary when, like, okay, are people even going to come watch us? And that's always a weird thing to kind of sort of feel as a comic, is like, do people even like me or even come to buy tickets to come watch me? So for them to come out for this is really cool.
And people did come out for this, and it was really cool. Unlike the chattering bars or bustling bistros where stand-up comedians normally perform, the attention was entirely on them in the theater, spotlight and all. And as it turns out, a movie theater does make for a great place to perform, even if the stage is a bit small. Jose's hoping to keep it going, making Comedy U a monthly appearance at Consolidated Theaters Kapolei. The crowd was definitely digging it, even asking comedians for photos. Tonight, they were the movie stars.
We got a packed house, and that's always fun, because a full theater usually laughs a lot. I'm excited because people are, like, coming up to us and asking us for interviews and taking pictures with us, and that makes us feel like celebrities.
Chris Staples, another stand-up comic, was just stoked to be performing in any kind of theater, something amateur comedians strive for.
I think it's pretty cool. I'm probably going to tell everybody that I did an actual theater and just ride the high.
But it's not just comedy. The theater is already renting out its space for birthday parties, private theater screen usage, and even marriage proposals. It's clear that the path forward for Consolidated Theaters is more than making it just a place for movies. So who was the mastermind behind this creative collaboration?
I mean, it is really obvious that the movie-going experience isn't as popular as it used to be. I wish it was more popular because I have never stopped going, even if I wasn't working for them. But yeah, it's, as we grow, we've been around for more than 100 years. It's eventually going to be time where we have to evolve and try to do different things. And this is just one of those types of accommodations that we wanted to try.
That's Adrian Ishizu, Consolidated Theater's regional food and beverage manager. The locally grown theater company has deep roots in Hawaii. Once known as Consolidated Amusement, and before that, Honolulu Amusement Company, at its peak, the chain had over 36 theaters across the state sporting the Consolidated name. It was the 1910s, and moving picture shows were all the rage. But the times are a-changing. Consolidated Theaters now only operates 6 locations, and they're all on Oahu. If the late 90s and early aughts were the theater's high point, July 2023 was its dark middle chapter. The chain was forced to close its only Maui theater in the Queen Ka'ahumanu Center, citing audience needs not recovering to their pre-pandemic levels. It had been in operation for nearly 30 years. And days later, Consolidated Theater's Coco Marina played its last showing before closing its doors for good. For Ishizu, she hasn't lost hope.
We have to evolve. We have to grow with whatever, not just trending. I mean, we want to also be, we also want to set the trends as well. But yes, definitely we have to evolve in order to stay around for everybody.
What are some of the biggest challenges something as monumental as a movie theater kind of faces in terms of just drawing those crowds again?
Well, our type of industry is very, I guess, different when compared to other businesses. Ours is fully driven by product. So if we don't have, you know, good product coming out, it's kind of hard for us to fill those seats because, you know, it's just not something that everyone wants to watch. So I won't say it, but, you know, in the last 5-6 years now, since something really big happened, it's been a little difficult.
But like Tim Robbins says in Shawshank Redemption,
hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies.
You know, there was writer strikes, there was a bunch of different events that happened one after the other that kind of affected those numbers. But well, we're really hopeful that this summer, or at least this year, that we can see that turnaround, you know, and just get more people in the seats, get more people watching films.
Despite everything you've just heard, there are still movie fans out there, and they even go to theaters. I still go to theaters. It's nostalgic for me. My dad would bail me out of elementary school early, we'd go catch matinees at the Consolidated Theaters in Mililani, and Ishizu hopes she can recreate these special moments with Consolidated Theaters' new events and maybe even draw back in fans for movies.
I remember going to watch Lord of the Rings, I think it was the third one, at like our local Dollar Theater. And I just remember we didn't even have popcorn or anything. We just sat there and watched the movie for 3 hours.
It's a long movie.
Yeah, it is. And I was like, Dad, it's a school night. What are we doing? But, you know, it's our, and especially our audience is a lot of families. And I just want to make sure that when people come, it's memorable.
I think Ishizu's onto something. Despite the jump in ticket prices, remember $5 matinees? I think I'll always go to the movies. I'm never on time, and I almost always miss the previews, but that's just how I like it. Running into the theaters with my snacks tucked under my shirt, I find my seat just as a Consolidated Hula trailer starts to play. And for a little bit, I'm free. My phone is silenced, the talking around me stops, the movie starts, and hey, it's showtime.
Yes, HPR's Kevin Allen produced this segment on the state of local movie theaters and the surprising turn to Comedy Showcase to attract new audiences. Look for links to find out more on our website later today. That wraps it up for us today. Tomorrow we plan to talk about quilts. Hawaiian quilting takes center stage in a celebration of our country's 250th birthday. We were wondering, what do you think about the recent Supreme Court decisions on birthright citizenship? Share your feedback. Record something on our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, or hit us up on social media. Find the conversation on our website or as a podcast on Spotify or Apple. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of the conversation.